Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nachyomi. My name is Adina Schmidman. I invite you to join the OU Women's Initiative Monday, November 28th at 12 noon Eastern Time for the Siyum for Sefer Yecheska with Mrs. Rena Foreman. Go to ou.org/women/siyum to sign up for reminders and the Zoom link. And now for today's perek.
Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman. And today, we will be studying Yecheskel, Perek Mem Vav, Chapter 46. Our Navi, in the final prakim of Sefer Yecheskel, shares a very special vision with us. The vision projects forward to a time we are all anxiously awaiting, the time of the third Bayit, Bayit Shlishi. The vision includes a great amount of detail, heightening the feeling of realism, both for Yecheskel and for us, the readers. We pick up on that energy. This third Bayit, it's really going to happen. In these prakim, it becomes clear that God is setting the stage not just for the Mikdash, but the society that will surround it. We become privy, through this prophecy, to a vision for a more perfect society in Acharit Hayamim. Part of the picture being painted includes the role of the Kohanim in this new Mikdash. A higher level of Kedusha is expected of these Kohanim as they fulfill their edicts. Kohanim of the past have failed in this respect. Two, in the words of Yecheskel, to be Mavdil Bein Kodesh Lechol. There are many laws laid out for these Kohanim, many of them new. But for now, let's just say that a common thread in these laws is that the Kohanim in this third Mikdash seem to occupy a quasi-Kohen Gadol role. It is as if there is no room for error. This Bayit, it is a final home for God, and failure is not an option. The vision also includes details about the Nasi, the leader of this utopian society. We heard about the Nasi in the last Perek, in Perek Memhe. But the truth is, we heard about a figure called a Nasi even earlier, back in Perek Lamed Zion, after the dry bones came to life and the pieces of wood fused together. There we heard, V'David Avdi Nasi Lahem Le'olam. And David, or the way the Mefarshim understand it, the house of David, will be the Nasi for them forever, Le'olam. The picture of this Nasi that is painted in Perek Lamed Zion is of some sort of political figure from the house of David. It is clearly part of the utopian picture of Acharit Hayamim, the end of days. The text told us back in Perek Memhe that the Nasi gets his own significant portion of land on both sides of the Truma Strip. La'aretz yelahem lachuza b'Yisrael. And our Perek continues to talk about the relationship of the Nasi to this land that is his inheritance. For these next laws in connection with this Nasi, it's important to know something about Yovel, the Jubilee year. In general, any sale of land from one's inheritance is really only binding until the end of the 50th year, the Yovel, which means, for example, that if you sell land to somebody on the 37th year of a Yovel cycle, that new owner will only own it for about 13 years. On the 50th year, that land will go back to its original owner. So with that background, here is Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'chi yitein matana minachalato l'achad me'avadav v'haytalo ad shnat hadror v'shavat lanasi. If this Nasi gives a gift from his Nachala to one of his servants at the end of the year of Dror, meaning the Yovel, that gift returns to the Nasi, the original owner. But the Pasuk lays out an exception to that rule. Ach Nachalato Banav Lahem Tihiyah. If the Nasi gifts something to his children, it will stay in their domain. What is the reason for this distinction when it comes to his family? The Pasuk explains, Me'achuzato yanchil et banav. If he is empowered to grant his own children an inheritance from Achuza, his own land, well, it gives him security that his family is taken care of. V'lo yikach ha-nasi minachalat ha'am lahonotam me'achuzatam. He won't feel the need to dispossess the nation of their Achuza to help out his kids. He won't be tempted, like the leaders, who were compared to the ruthless shepherds in Paraglamidalid, to usurp land that is not rightly his own. At the same time, the fact that the land he gives his servants goes back during Yovel, that too is a safeguard. Because this way, if the Nasi decides to do something a little random or crazy, like make his servants happy with some outrageous gift, or maybe when he's older and vulnerable, gift all of his assets to the yeshiva at the top of the hill, leaving nothing for his kids, that act automatically becomes reversible at the time of Yovel. Other psukim in our perek further define the role of the Nasi, this time with reference to the deference the nation gives him, and the extent that, on the other hand, he is to be treated as a regular citizen. On the one hand, in Pasuk Yud, V'hanasi betocham bevo'am yavo uvetzeitam yetzeu, the Nasi will come and go through the gates of the city, along with his constituency. No special privileges, special doors just for him. Yet, on the other hand, in Pasuk Yud Bet, V'chi yaseh ha'nasi nedava, ola ushlamim, nedava la'Hashem, ufatach lo et ha'sha'ar haponek hadin, v'asa et olato v'et shlamav. When a Nasi chooses to bring a korban nedava, a voluntary korban, he gets special treatment. The inner eastern-facing gate, which is generally closed during the week, is opened specially for this Nasi to come and bring his korbanot. Since the door is opened, especially for him, once he leaves, the gate will be closed. So on the one hand, he walks with the people when it's possible. But on the other hand, when he has an individual need or even desire, such as bringing a voluntary korban, special deference is paid to him. The verses then go on to detail the laws of some unusual korbanot connected with the Nasi and holidays. According to the Malbim, all these strange laws are really part of a one-time inauguration, Yemei Miluim, Chinuch of the third Bayit, which started in the last parak in Parak Memhei. There, we discussed the Pesach korbanot as part of this celebration. But it turns out that Pesach was really just the beginning of the celebratory experience. The Yemei Miluim, the Malbim explains, last for a total of 190 days, through the last day of Sukkot. And all of these strange korbanot listed in this parak are really just a part of that ceremony. In light of that, let's look at Pasuk Aleph, the pasuk that introduces this extended ceremony described in this parak. The topic here is an eastern gate, Sha'ar HaChatzir HaPnimi HaPoneh Kadim. Notice that the gate described here is the inner eastern-facing gate, not to be confused with the outer eastern-facing gate of the courtyard. If you recall, that outer eastern-facing gate of the courtyard, it was sagur, closed. It was never to be opened again once the Kavod of God entered the Mikdash through that entrance. But on the other hand, the gate described in our parak is the inner eastern-facing gate, and although it was closed, sometimes it was open at other times. Yiyas sagur sheshet yemei ha-ma'aseh, uv'yom ha-shabbat yipateach, uv'yom ha-chodesh yipateach. This gate is closed all week long, but for Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, it will be left accessible. Why would that be? What is it about those days in particular that differentiate them from other days? Well, Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are essentially vacation days, if you will. They are days off from work, so to speak. The Malbim explains these are the days we want to make sure the temple is fully accessible to the throngs of people who want to visit. What better way to spend a day off than to pay a visit to the Mikdash? It's a great spiritual family outing. Something to encourage, wouldn't you say? And what better way to encourage this kind of traffic than to make the easternmost inner gate, the most convenient access to the Mikdash, accessible to the foot traffic? Better to encourage visits to the Mikdash than have the public hang out at the beaches or pubs, right? And so it was. The gate to the Mikdash was to be left open on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. Because remember, these visitors are coming of their own volition, not out of a chiyuv, not out of obligation, like during the Shalosh Regalim. So God looks to encourage visitors by keeping those doors open on these potential visiting days, so that the experience is pleasant, not an experience that consists of congested streets. But now, let's take another look at that pasuk describing when the inner gate is open and when it is closed. Yihyeh sagur shisha yemei hamaaseh. That language for the weekdays, it's familiar from somewhere, isn't it? Our natural thought would be, where in Tanakh have we seen this? But the truth is, this time, it is not Tanakh that this phrase is familiar from. In fact, these words appear nowhere else in Tanakh at all. This verse in Yechezkel is the one time that weekdays are referred to as Shesha Yemei Hamaaseh. These words actually resonate from somewhere else. You actually say these words every week. Have you placed it? Yes. Those words, Shesha Yemei Hamaaseh, are words that we say in Havdalah every Motzei Shabbos. We say that God separates Bein Yom HaShivi'i L'Shesha Yemei Hamaaseh, between the seventh day, Shabbos, and the rest of the doing action-oriented days of the week. And here's something that's even more intriguing. Replay the words of the Havdalah blessing in your mind for a moment. Start from the very beginning of it. Hamavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol. Wait, stop right there. Those words, too, are familiar to us from Sefer Yechezkel. This first phrase of Havdalah, it too is lifted right out of our Sefer. Those first words of Havdalah, of course, the phrase L'Havdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol, is a refrain in Sefer Yechezkel. Here, at the end of the Sefer, this phrase is used multiple times to describe the role of the Kohanim. Their role is to separate, to enforce boundaries between the holy and the ordinary. So here we have these two phrases in our Havdalah prayer that we say at the end of Shabbos. And these first and last phrases of that Havdalah prayer, they are lifted right out of Sefer Yechezkel. That can't be coincidental. It seems intentional on the part of the author of Havdalah, doesn't it? Havdalah's beginning and end seem to purposely borrow from Sefer Yechezkel. What should we make of that? What does the author want us to understand? How does the context of these phrases in Sefer Yechezkel help us understand the meaning of Havdalah better? Well, let's meditate on those phrases for a moment and think about their context in Sefer Yechezkel. Hamavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol, Bein Yom HaShvi'i L'Shesha Yemei HaMaaseh. If we really give it some thought, there is actually a sort of tension between the two kinds of separation being described here, the first type of Havdalah and the second one. And you see it if you look at what these phrases signify in Sefer Yechezkel. Because think about this. What if in Sefer Yechezkel you only had the first imperative, that first phrase from our Havdalah prayer, Hamavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol? Meaning, what if you only had all those laws that the Kohanim needed to keep out the mundane? Seems like that would be a good plan, no? Well, not really, because yes, you could protect the Mikdash from the deleterious influences of the people that way, but what would you sacrifice? What would you really be left with? The Mikdash would then just serve as an ivory tower, a shining city on the hill, if you will. It would be a pure structure, yes, but a tower disconnected from the people. The people, they would be kept out. They would have no access, for fear that letting them in would bring in the mundane. And then, what would be the point of the whole thing? You've been in those types of homes, no doubt. A home where a guest enters and is afraid to mess things up. Afraid to touch anything. Afraid to sit on the couches. Afraid to step on the perfect floor, for fear of ruining something. And what really is the point of having a couch if you can't sit on it? Having a beautiful home to welcome guests that you are worried about muddying with your footprints. That kind of house is just that. It is a house, but it isn't a home. That is definitely not the kind of feel we want to have in God's home. Of course, we want to treat God's home with respect and deference. But God's home is not meant to isolate. The house of God is meant to involve the people. It is meant to feel like a home, a place in which they can enjoy God's company, so to say, a place they want to take the family to visit on their day off, be it Shabbos or Chodesh. So how is that achieved? Enter the other Havdalah, the one that lies in tension with the Mavdil Ben Kodesh L'Chol. It is the command to leave the gates of the house of God open, not all the time, but on Shabbos and Chodesh. This command creates a Havdalah between Shabbos and the days of the week. On the days of the week, the gate is closed, but on Shabbos, it's open. Paradoxically, this kind of Havdalah, separation, that doesn't isolate the people, it allows them in. Taken all together, these two commands that Havdalah picks up on, they balance each other out. And a good way to think about that balance is to think about the two easternmost gates of the Mikdash, the outer one and the inner one. Think about the juxtaposition of those two gates. The outermost one is always closed once God's Kavod comes into the Mikdash. That is necessary. We keep that gates closed because we want to be Mavdil, Ben Kodesh L'Chol. We want to separate out the Chol and to keep God's Kavod in. But now, think about the inner eastern gate, the one we are introduced to in our parak. This one portrays a different kind of Havdalah, a Havdalah Bein Yom HaShvi'i L'Sheshet Yemei HaMa'aseh. It allows access to the people and doesn't shun them on account of the Mikdash, imposing holiness. This gate, with its own Havdalah, it is meant to offset that austere feeling by encouraging access to the Mikdash at certain joyous times. These two Havdalahs that lie in tension with each other, and we keep them in mind every Mosei Shabbos when we say the Havdalah prayer, why? Because even in the absence of a third Mikdash, they help us deal with another kind of holiness in our lives, and that is Shabbos. On the one hand, we, like the people Yechezkel was talking to, need to be Mavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol. We need to keep Shabbos holy, to enforce clear boundaries to protect that holiness. Once sundown comes and the candles are lit, no cooking, no cars, no phone, or technology. Shabbos needs to be Shabbos. But Shabbos can't only be Shabbos, because there's another imperative, to ensure that the holy thing, the Mikdash, could actually influence the mundane. And maybe, as we head off into the week, we too are trying to do that. We try to take a little bit of the connection we felt with God and our families on Shabbos and bring that with us into the week. We want the holiness of Shabbos not to stay in an ivory tower on the top of the hill. We want our Shabbos to be a mini replica of Yechezkel's third Mikdash. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilu Nishmat Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Sender.